Hello, friends. It's that time again. It's time to find your balls. Welcome to the Man-Made Podcast. Good guys who drink and cuss a little. My name is Jeff Stuckey. You know me better as Shaman, sitting in the position of shotgun, as always, because I have a propensity to wreck things. So the driver's seat belongs to Greg Allen, as always, the Rocket Man. That's Greg, right. How are you, buddy?
I'm good. Good. I want to welcome our listeners and introduce the topic. In one way, I am eager to discuss it.
In one way, you're eager.
Yes. In another way, I just want to crush the whole idea of it. So wow. I wanted to get your perspective.
Can you do that? Can you crush with eagerness, or does that require a different emotional? You got to be like some fucking visceral rage to crush, right?
I might have used the wrong word. I like to crush like verbally and intellectually.
Oh, okay.
Well, yeah.
Like a surgeon with a scalpel.
Exactly. Right. Just as much damage, you know?
There we go.
Yeah. So we want to talk about this idea of work-life balance. The answer to whatever questions that brings up is where we want to land. But the problem I have to begin with is I don't even understand that notion. What are we trying to balance? Is there like life and work that fight against each other? When we're not working, we're living. And when we're not living, we're working. I don't know. So I don't understand that balance idea. I'm just curious, how do we come up with a whole balance of life, if you will? And where does work or play or relationships, things like that, fit into it? It seems like we do have a problem that we'll call work-life balance, that men have that. So tell me about that.
Well, it seems like we ought to call those people that emphasize to men that they should have a work-life balance and ask them, what the fuck are you talking about?
Yeah, okay.
Like, I got bills to pay. I got these kids, man, they're fucking expensive. And so exactly how am I supposed to put my life into balance when, in the words of Cage the Elephant, there ain't no rest for the wicked? I got fucking bills to pay, man. I got mouths to feed. How am I supposed to have this work-life balance?
Yeah, and you can't pull back on all those expectations that people have on you and say, well, I'm going to work less so you can, you know, the person that's demanding things from you can live less. It's like, that's not going
to
work.
Go to your boss and tell them that your life coach said you need to achieve greater work-life balance. And please report back your findings, because we would be incredibly interested in that.
Yeah, and on Facebook, people can find us at Becoming Man Made Today. Get on there, give us your feedback to anything on the podcast.
Or we can spare you that humiliation and just tell you there's no such thing as work-life balance.
Okay. That's a good starting point. I like it so far.
Work dictates work, and life dictates life. And I think it's interesting. One of the number one causes of insomnia is fear of having insomnia.
Oh, no, I'm not going to go to sleep tonight.
Oh, my God. Am I having that fucking insomnia thing? Like, what do I, oh, my God. And, like, so if we didn't have the category of insomnia, I would just lay there until I fell asleep. Yeah. And so work-life balance seems to be that same sort of notion. Like, we all act like we know what we're talking about. Oh, yeah. Shit, man. How's your work-life balance? Mine's just whatever. Yeah. Like, what are you talking about? Like, that's awesome. Like, I don't own a fucking vineyard, and like, I just get to like go hang out with my wife and kids whenever I want.
Right,
so while you're figuring out your work-life balance, I'm going to go to work. And I think the solution to that, one, is crushing. Mm-hmm. Which I believe you did. You adequately crushed that, is more the idea of being present. And this is a very common Eastern idea, more mystic, if you will, that the best experience, the most effective that I can be, is being present, being in the moment that I'm in.
Yeah.
So if I'm at work, right, and I'm working on a work project or a task or something, how do I maximize my efficiency while working on that task? Worrying about the fact that I need to hurry up and pull emotional and mental resources away from that task, or by being totally present.
Mm-hmm.
And the same thing when I'm with my wife, when I'm spending time with my kids, it's that same notion.
Mm-hmm.
How is this time going to be most effective? It's going to be most effective if I'm fully present. I'm not worrying about other things. I'm not distracted about the things that I didn't get done at work. And this is where we as men struggle, right? Because it's number four on our psychological conflicts. When we're at work, we're worried about not being present at home enough and vice versa. So it's much like that notion of laying in bed, worrying about not being able to fall asleep.
Yeah.
If I would rid my mind of that and just relax, oh my God, I can't fall asleep. What am I going to fucking do? I can't fall asleep. What should I do? I'm just going to relax. Then I'll drift off into sleep. And so the ultimate solution for us in terms of the work-life balance is seeing it as nonsense. I mean, if you're working 80 hours a week and you don't need to be, then you're not who we're talking to.
Yeah.
But for the majority of people, it's understanding that those things kind of balance themselves, and I can be fully present in whatever it is that I'm engaged in.
Yeah. And it seemed like where I find that men have trouble is being present at home. You know, the rules are different there. The dynamic is different, and it's not as easy for a guy. So to be totally present and there for his wife, there for his kids based on their needs, which may or may not flare up that day, but to be totally present in that is what we probably most need to work on.
Yes. And that's a difficult, very difficult, because we tend to be task oriented. We tend to like to check the box.
Yeah.
You know, then when it comes to participating in the family, again, we're already restricted because we're avoiding feelings of vulnerable emotion.
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. So then oftentimes the engagement in family or the engagement with my children is exposure to their vulnerable emotions and then not trying to quote unquote fix those feelings, but just being present in those.
Yeah.
And then not being consumed by what I didn't get done at work today or what I need to get done tomorrow is where the real challenge is.
Oh, yeah. And the needs that are going to pop up with your children and probably your spouse are not something all the time that they're just going to hand you and say, I need this, you know, fix this for me or do this for me or give me $10. That happens, of course. But I mean, the needs are only going to surface when they know you're present. And gosh, that could just be detrimental to be thinking about what you needed to do at work.
Yeah, because too much of our identity is our work, you know, our career or whatever that is. So much of our identity, so much of, you know, if we think about our previous podcast, The Illusion of Self, so much of that self is constructed by our, what we do vocationally. I mean, we went to school, we got an education, the purpose of getting an education is to go off and get a job and do better than our parents did, you know, all of this. So it's like so much of our identity. So then to focus on something else, it becomes almost an impossible task.
Yeah. Well, you know, that reminds me of when my wife and I first got married and we meet other couples and stuff and people would say, well, who are you or what are you or something like that? And my wife would always cringe when I'd get asked that, because my answer was always, what I do is not who I am, but who I am has a big impact on what I do. And
you literally would fucking say that?
Oh, absolutely. And I thought it was the right thing to do.
That's one of the greatest things I've ever heard. You need to slow that thing. Play that thing at slow speed. Give me that thing again.
Okay. What I do is not who I am, but who I am has a big impact on what I do.
I have to see you do this to someone.
Oh, well, I've kind of
did they just leave or like what would happen?
Well, there's usually silence and my wife would say, he's an engineer. And then they would say, yeah, okay, that figures. So, you know, which really messed things up when I've switched careers twice since then. Well, now I'm actually back in the engineering world.
Oh, so she's safe again. Okay, now she can use that.
Yeah. Okay, so that doesn't work in social settings, but I needed to say it to myself. And that just kind of informs how I'm going to deal with every situation that comes up, who I am. Because the engineer part doesn't deal well with most of life part. Life, I thought it would work under certain situations, follow equations and things. It just doesn't. So I knew the engineering part wasn't working. So I had a way of understanding more of my identity, my core values, and that's who I am. Now, again, in social settings, you try to explain all that, and people say, well, so where do you work? You know, they just figure, let's get you an easier question.
Let's circumvent this thing. Yeah. We'll close in the question this thing. Where the fuck do you work?
Yeah.
Well, where I work doesn't define me. This was a struggle for me early on when I was in grad school, and I was raised on the west side of Evansville, which is not your, let's just say they did not cultivate those vulnerable emotions.
Right.
And I essentially came from a, because I said so, I'll give you something to cry about.
Yeah.
You know, kind of that, which was probably very normative. I mean, I'm 50 years old now. So, you know, people around our age, that's probably more common than uncommon.
Mm-hmm.
And so I can remember having a real crisis when I was in grad school, because I start learning all these things about lifespan development, early childhood development, the development of the person, all of those kinds of things. And I remember there were so many moments in time where I just these clear conflicts. And I remember mm-hmm. I had such an incredible amount of respect for my clinical supervisor. We were talking about parenting, and one of his favorite things to say to me was, Jeffrey, freedom is reality, control is an illusion. And I was like, I don't know what the fuck that even means. Like, what are you talking? But I couldn't say that, right? Because I needed, and he just, Jeffrey, freedom is reality, control is an illusion. Yeah. And I genuinely believed that I had control over everything.
I
certainly believed that I had control over my kids.
Yeah.
Tragically, I did to a degree.
Yeah.
Because I was a tyrant.
Uh-huh.
Because I was a, because I said so, because, you know, if you want something to cry about, I would count my kids down and do shit like, oh my God, just like, wow. We even taught our kids sign language. That's how fucking insecure we were as parents. Like, we have to so overcompensate for our capacity, for our lack of a capacity to parent, that our kids have to be at preschool doing fucking sign language. Yeah, that's a high level of insecure.
Yeah.
And so learning to be present at home
mm-hmm.
was debilitating almost. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was just so difficult.
Yeah.
To finally learn how to do that, because we're not given the tools.
Mm-hmm.
And we approach our family, we approach our relationships with our children, those kinds of things, typically much the same way that we would approach a task at work.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
And it's like, get your fucking homework done or what the, you know, it.
Yeah.
But it's not that being present. And so for many of us, it's a profound skills deficit.
Yeah. Yeah. So how does the idea of the success, power, and achievement conflict in men, how does that play into their issues with work and that being a dominant kind of factor?
Well, I think it's because we feel like we have to constantly be pursuing that.
Mm-hmm.
So if we achieve a goal, right. Mm-hmm. And once we achieve a goal, what's the very next thing we do?
Yeah, we set another one.
Set a new goal, right?
Yeah.
So we get on this treadmill that's just constantly speeding up. We don't ever get to say like, that's good. That's plenty of money. That's enough time at work. That's enough responsibility.
Oh,
you know, it's like we always have to be like, well, golly gee, yes, I'm going to go for this or I'm going to go for that, whatever it is, whether it's, you know, sales, you're increasing your sales or you're climbing some kind of ladder or whatever it is, there's never a stop where you finally get to say, this is good.
Mm-hmm.
I'm good right here.
Right.
Because we just don't have any other orientation to reality.
Mm-hmm.
And then we obviously project that on our kids where we're putting this pressure on them to be fucking all-star in the 3-year-old baseball league
yeah.
or the honor student or whatever. And it's like we just – because we lack any other way to relate.
Yeah, yeah. Well, if a guy were to look for steps – to improve this whole notion of, we'll call it balance, but I don't know what's a good name for it. So it seems like what he needs to do is focus on being present. And if he's present at work, then those things are going to work themselves out. And my hope is if he's present at home, not only will that make the home life better, but it might make him be more greedy with his priorities. So understand them better and say, this is my priorities. So I'm only going to let things interfere with my time with my kids or my wife or the extent to which I can contribute into their lives. Something's got to fight to interfere with that. And so if it's work, yeah, I'll give that 20, 40 hours a week, whatever it takes, not 60 or 80.
Right. Unless, and for some people, that is what it requires.
Yeah.
But I think we have to get out of the notion that there is some sort of magical balance.
Yeah.
Now, I'm not, you know, the workaholic that's putting in 80 hours a week, whatever, those kinds of things. You know, we're not, that's not who we're talking to. You know,
right.
Who we're talking to right now are the guys that genuinely feel the conflict.
Okay.
That genuinely feel like if I don't work this overtime or if I don't achieve this goal or whatever, you know, this sales goal, whatever, like my family's going to suffer, whatever that is,
yeah.
Feeling like he can't have as quality of life by being present
mm-hmm.
because he can't.
Yeah, yeah, okay. So we acknowledge that there's even a season a person may need to work more for maybe some catastrophe happened in their life or something that just requires extra work. But in the normal state of equilibrium, a guy could just focus more on being present at both of those places, and especially at home, because that's where it's difficult to be there. It's difficult to be what other people need you to be.
And here's a couple of like ways that you can practice that. Okay. Mm-hmm. For men to practice being more present at home, because that's where we struggle more. 1A is mm-hmm. meditate. Jon Kabat-Zinn is the guru of meditation. Please try some meditation. Meditation is activating your brain so that you can be present. It's mm-hmm. not voodoo. It's not spiritual. It's not anything else. It's just activating your rational brain, the prefrontal cortex, so you can be actively engaged in the moment that you're in. Meditation is the greatest that's what meditation does.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. So a form of communicational meditation, when you're having a conversation with your wife and you feel yourself starting to react to her emotionally, either she's pissing me off and now I just want her to shut up so I can say something defensively.
Yeah.
Or you're starting to feel that shame sense where you feel like you need to say, I'm sorry, I'll try harder. Okay. Mm-hmm. We're going to get rid of both of those.
Yeah.
And so when you feel yourself starting to react emotionally, say to your wife, can I tell you what I've heard you say? And then say back, this is what I've heard you say. Is that what you're wanting me to hear? And the success in that exercise, and it's profoundly successful, is if I can change that, okay, because most guys don't have another tool to use. They just react.
Yeah, yeah.
In one of those two, like, well, here's why you're wrong, or I'm sorry, I'll try harder. But if I'm listening, right, and I'm engaged, and I'm setting the challenge of myself to be able to say back to you what I've heard you say, then I'm focused on the words that you're saying,
uh-huh.
and I'm not getting lost in my emotional response. Honey, can I tell you what I've heard you say? Blah, 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 blah. Is that what you wanted me to hear? Now, the wording is important. Don't say, so you said this, yeah. because that's an invitation to a power struggle. I'll tell you how that conversation is going to go. She's going to say, no, I didn't. And you're going to say, yes, you did. No, I didn't. Yes, you did. No, I didn't. Yes, and then let me, don't do that.
Okay.
The wording is critically important. Can I tell you what I heard? I can't argue that with you. You didn't hear that, Greg. What are you, a fucking idiot? There's no, it's, this is what I heard. Is that what you want me to hear?
Yeah.
If she says, no, fucking idiot, that's not what I wanted you to hear. And that's the problem with our relationship is you don't ever fucking listen to me. Okay? Don't take the bait and just say, what is it you want me to hear?
Yeah.
So that's with wife, with kids. And this was a tough one for me to learn. If little Johnny, little five-year-old Johnny, brings me a picture, and I look at his picture, and he says, Daddy, what do you think of the picture? And I say, that's shit, dude. Is that what? That's awful. Yeah. Is that validating or invalidating?
That sounds invalidating.
Okay. So Johnny comes with another picture and he's like, Daddy, Daddy, look at my picture. And I say, Johnny, that's fantastic. That's wonderful. Validating or invalidating?
Yeah. I'm going to take the bait. That sounds validating.
That's wrong.
Oh, great. I knew it.
Because there's no difference, right? Mm-hmm. I'm imposing my perspective on his work.
Right, right.
Now, in one, it just happens to be I'm imposing my positive perspective, the other negative. Mm-hmm. It's validating when I say, Johnny, tell me about your picture. And then he starts to tell me about his drawing.
Yeah.
And then I say to him, so are you happy with it? Do you think you can do better? Or are you really pleased with what you've done? And I let him validate his experience. Mm-hmm. Now, that fucked me up, man. Because when I started, like, I'm like, this is bullshit. Like, I'll tell little Johnny if his picture is any good or not. Because he's fucking 5 years old, and he doesn't know if that's a piece of shit or not. Yeah. But if I tell him it's great, and then he just puts down pen and paper, and he doesn't try anymore.
Yeah.
And it's like, if we can resist that quality control aspect of ourselves and be interested.
Yeah, yeah.
Whether it's something tangible and concrete like that or a behavior.
Yeah.
Ah, so you did that. Fucking idiot. Can't say that. Did that get the results that you wanted? Is that how you thought that was going to go?
Yeah.
If you could do it differently, how would you do it differently? And I'm telling you, I don't know for you, and I'm pretty high on openness. Mm-hmm. Learning to interact with my children that way was two things. One, damn near impossible. It's probably why I started drinking and cussing a little. And two, completely transformed our relationship.
Yeah, yeah.
To where we truly became allies.
Mm-hmm.
Where they knew that I was for them in whatever it was.
Yeah.
And whatever it was, we were going to process it together.
Yeah.
And we were going to figure it out. And that made parenting exhilarating.
Wow, that's great. Yeah.
And so those are two concrete ways that we as men can start to be present with our spouse, with our children.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like that has a compounding effect because you may not know how to be present, but if you ask those questions, like you said, then you're all of a sudden more present with what's going on. You know?
And I'm using my rational brain rather than reacting to everything. Yeah. And so that's what's so effective about this. And it literally transformed.
Mm-hmm.
Because when I say that I was a tyrant to my kids when they were very young, that's not an overstatement. I would like to say that just kidding, Greg, so our listeners feel better. That's not, I mean, it was. And then to have, and I don't know how to say it differently than this, but to feel that sense that we were allies and we were doing this together and we both trusted that process. It just, I mean, I have an amazing relationship with my children that I'm incredibly proud of.
Yeah, that's awesome. And actually, you were helpful when I was raising my teenage girls. I remember talking to you. We brought the one of them. I'll just say one of them. we brought one of them in, and after talking for a while, you pointed out, like, Greg, no, she is being the teenager. She's doing her part. What you're doing as a parent, I don't get that. Greg and Mary, you're the ones that aren't playing good parents. She's playing a great teenager. And
what's the definition of a teenager? Do every stupid fucking thing there is to do. That's their job, right?
Yeah.
It's not much different than when we were teenagers, right?
That hasn't changed.
No. The job description is constant, man.
Yeah.
It's still there.
Yeah. So I was able to get involved in her life by asking those types of questions. Like, I see that you're going this route. How do you think that's going to work for you? And that sounded different, you know, with girls and stuff. But that seemed to just draw us closer. And the main thing that I had to learn to do was not show a reaction. If they would come home and say, I did this, it's like, okay, well, tell me how that's going to play out, rather than say, wow, that is stupid, you know, which I was thinking it, but I'm thinking somewhere in your mind, you had an idea that this ended in a better result. So walk me through that, you know?
Right. And when we begin that at a very early age and we start to create that cooperation, it is profound.
Yeah, yeah.
So how'd we do? Did we crush it?
I think we did. I think we just dismissed the idea that a guy ought to put his effort into balancing two things like that. It's like, just forget it.
And again, if we're wrong, please tell us. But I think it's like insomnia. We want you to buy our sleep medication, so we're creating a conflict for you. So you have to come to our weekend seminar.
But at least if a guy could realize, you know, I'm going to be at work when I'm at work. I'm going to be at home when I'm there. And I'm going to do everything I can to be present in the relationships that are important to me. And you've given us some great tools to do that. Because before you mentioned that, I'd still be wondering, how do I be present? I'd be forcing that. But a few simple questions that allow you to get engaged, you know, to the other person.
Simple's not always easy, but they are simple. And with effort, will make a profound difference.
Yeah.
And as always, you can find us on Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
How can they do that?
Becoming Man Made Today.
And if you have more questions, you want to go in more depth on any of these topics, this topic specifically, any others, you can find us there. We want to give you the tools that you need to be successful, but nothing in the world is free. So if you have not subscribed to the podcast, and if you have not given us a 5-star rating, don't even fucking think about looking us up on Facebook. The first step, always in finding your balls and being man-made, is hitting that like button and giving us those 5 stars. All right, my friend, until next time.
All right.
Thanks for keeping it on the road.
All right. Thank you, Shaman.
All right.